Welcome back in hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Got a loaded show for you here today. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us at 7:30. We'll get back into the Gus Malzahn discussion with him. Also take a look at Tennessee's coaching staff as well. Chris Mason at 8:30 to get into the latest with the Nashville Predators. And then our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports at 9 o'clock. So a lot still to come here today on the show. And Joe, we've spent a lot of time talking about the quarterback situation for the Indianapolis Colts, originally around Matthew Stafford in that conversation. As we know, he is with the Rams. That's not going to be the option for the Colts at this point. So of the options still on the table, Carson Wentz comes to mind, potentially Sam Darnold comes to mind. A few people have thrown out maybe Matt Ryan being available for the Colts as well, depending on what the Falcons decide to do with the future of the quarterback position. What option still left on the table that is realistic for the Colts do you think is the best situation for the Titans? Like, if they ended up with Carson Wentz, is that better than Sam Darnold? What are you rooting for if you're a Titans fan with the Colts?
Mute button number
hello,
one.
Hello. Hey.
There he is.
As I was saying, Mariota, Yeah. Did you guys see the ESPN account thing on Wentz and the Bears yesterday?
Yeah, it looks like that's heating up a little bit.
Well, no. So this was a fake account, but Jerry
the fake
Palm,
one. No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, so Jerry Palm, who's, you know, CBS bracketologist, and he's actually a Chicago guy. He retweeted it, and it was like, you know, it was one of those. It was a well done fake account, looked just like ESPN. You know, said according to Adam Schefter, you know, the Bears have given up a first, a fifth, and Foles, I think, for Wentz. To me, Wentz is and he retweeted it, and you know, and then he got shamed, as he should have been shamed, just like I should be shamed for being on mute right there. But I think Wentz is the guy. Well, see, it's hard. If you look at Wentz and Darnold, I mean, to me, those are the – I guess you'd go three realistic people, potential realistic options who could be good. I would go Wentz. I would go Darnold. I would go Matt Ryan. Very different cases. I mean, there's questions with all of them. I think, especially because Reich and Wentz have a history, you know, it's just hard for me to believe that he's just forgotten how to play football. I have to think injuries and offensive line awfulness have been a big part of it. I think that there's a higher ceiling with Wentz than with those other two at this point. Now, it could also be bad, but I think that there's, especially because, I mean, he is athletic, gets running out. I mean, they can do different things with him that you're not going to do with, like, a Matt Ryan, for example, you know? So that I would rank it him highest concern. I'd probably go Matt Ryan next and Darnold third, although even if it is Darnold, I'm not convinced Darnold can't be a good QB in this league. It's just we haven't seen it, and then how much of that is, you know, Adam Gase, just the Jets, awfulness in general.
Yeah, that's a good question. It's been really difficult, I think, to evaluate Sam Darnold at this point. Joe, I'm going to throw out another name at you as well. And this comes from a list that we're going to discuss in greater detail in the next segment coming up from Pro Football Focus, where basically they've listed out their top 100 free agents. Coming in at number 29 on Pro Football Focus's top 100 free agents is Jameis Winston. And not only is Jameis Winston number 29, Pro Football Focus has Jameis Winston signing a one-year, $5 million contract with the Indianapolis Colts. So what do you think about maybe Jameis Winston coming into the fold in Indianapolis? And of the quarterbacks we've mentioned, where does Jameis rank on that list of what you'd be concerned about or what you'd be happy with if you're a Titans fan?
Boy, that's really interesting. And it's an oversight to not consider him. I think Jameis Winston, like in terms of ability and, you know, arm talent and all that stuff, I think he's got a lot. I think he's got a lot to offer. obviously, you know, like that last year, it's just so frustrating to watch him throw it to the other team. I could certainly see it like a Frank Gregg saying, okay, we can, you know, we can clean a lot of that up. I could see a lot of coaches looking at it that way. I would almost look at Jameis Winston. Where would he fit in those four? I mean, I think I would put him – I might put him second on that list after Wentz in terms of potential because it's just like with Wentz. Wentz looked awful last year, throwing to the other team, fumbling, just terrible. Does that mean he's doomed to always be that? I don't think so, and so I would go the same way with Jameis. I don't think he's doomed to be a 30-pick guy every year. I mean, if he can – you know, if Jameis Winston, again, with that offensive line, with that running game, with that defense, and decent, you know, good receivers. I mean, if he can just cut it to 15, you know, they could really have something there. I mean, it's an interesting thought. I know a lot of Titans fans would probably be like, ah, whatever, I don't care. Just like Mariota, the top two of that draft are busts. But it's not the worst idea in the world.
It's not. I would probably have to put Jameis third on the list of the quarterbacks that we've thrown out there. I think Wentz and Matt Ryan are the top two. Look, Matt Ryan, to me, if that ends up being the route that the Colts go and they're able to execute a trade there, and who knows what Atlanta's plans are with Matt Ryan. Maybe Arthur Smith wants to come in and see what he's got with him this year, and he remains in Atlanta. We'll just have to wait and see on that front. But I would have to put Matt Ryan. I think he's very similar to – Phillip Rivers in terms of I think the Colts will be pretty good. I think Matt Ryan you could win with. Now, can he take you at this point in his career to that next level? Like, can you make a Super Bowl run with Matt Ryan? I don't know. I mean, that roster's pretty good. I mean, they've still got some work to do offensively with some receiving help, I think. But I would put Jameis third on the list simply because, like, I don't think we have any clue right now what Sam Darnold is. And I think Jameis has more potential, especially more arm talent than Sam Darnold does. But the turnovers, I mean, they've got to be a huge concern. Like, if you're a Titans fan and Jameis Winston ends up being the quarterback of the Colts, I think you're licking your chops from the standpoint of just based on his history, you should have some opportunities to create some turnovers in those games. But I don't think it's just a given that Winston shows up and all of a sudden, you know, he's throwing 25, 30 picks every year in Indy. I mean, that certainly he's got the ability to do that, but he also has the ability to make some plays down the field. And you're hoping if you're a Titans fan that he has not figured out the turnover part of it, because if he has, I think he could be a pretty good, pretty dangerous quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Jameis Winston looking at the Titans defense, you're also licking your chops and saying, I'm going to throw for 450 and four touchdowns today, you know? So
exactly.
I mean, yeah it's an interesting point on Matt Ryan. It's a tough one for me because I've been – well, look, I was fooled by Tom Brady last year. Watching him in his last game with the Patriots, it was like, okay, great run, man, but, you know, you're fading here. And then here he comes this year in a new spot and plays great. So, you know, Matt Ryan looks like that to me too, like he's diminishing. And I know that there's a lot of things about that team that have diminished, so you have to take that into account. But he just doesn't look like the same Matt Ryan from 5 years ago to me. But, you know, maybe you're right. I mean, maybe he is a little bit safer option than Jameis if you were to bring him into Indy with all the things around him. And any quarterback going to Indy, it's got to be attractive because, like, it's not all on you. I mean, maybe some quarterbacks are like, well, I want to be in a more, you know, pass-heavy offense. But, I mean, it's a balanced offense. It's not all on you. And, I mean, the Colts this year, to me, could have benefited from someone who could go vertical some. You know, they were kind of kept in a box a little bit, even though Phillip Rivers had great numbers and had some great games. But it's got to be attractive for quarterbacks, I would think, looking at the Colts right now and saying, man, that's – I mean, when you have – again, they got to address their offensive line a little bit. They're getting banged up there and old in some spots. But overall, the interior is fantastic, and, you know, you got to love what you're seeing from the backs and the defense. I mean, that's got to be a place where you look and say, I could turn things around in that spot.
And, you know, I've thrown out that list of Pro Football Focus's top 100, Jameis Winston coming in at 29. When we come back, we'll dive a little bit deeper into the list and really focus in on some targets and some already members of the Tennessee Titans. You won't believe where Pro Football Focus has some of these Titans on this list, and you won't believe, specifically with one member, how much money they've got them making next year. We'll discuss it when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Make sure you're tuning in later this morning at 8:45 for your chance to participate in Pred's Pick to Click and win a prize pack brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. We'll have that opportunity for you at 8:45, looking ahead to the game tonight between the Predators and the Dallas Stars. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us in about 15 minutes, so looking forward to that conversation with him. We'll get into the latest on the Tennessee Volunteers with him. But Joe, last segment, we mentioned the Pro Football Focus top 100 free agent list that I read off. Jameis Winston coming in at number 29, and Pro Football Focus has him going to the Indianapolis Colts on a one-year, $5 million deal. Lots of Titans scattered throughout this list as well. The highest-ranked Titan on the list comes in at number 21, and that is Desmond King, the number 21 on the list for Pro Football Focused, and they've got him signing a three-year, $17.5 million deal with $10 million being guaranteed with the Titans. So Desmond King, according to Pro Football Focused, they see him sticking around with the Titans. Joe, how likely do you think it is that Desmond King is back in a Titans uniform next season?
Well, I don't see Desmond King and Malcolm Butler being on the Titans next year. I could be wrong, but you know, you talk about the money required there and the money that you aren't using on other things. I have a hard time seeing that. I mean, look, I think the Titans, given their situation, I think that they have to, unless they just have compelling evidence that there's just no way it's going to happen, I think that they have to pencil in Christian Fulton as being a starter next year, as a second-round pick on a rookie deal, and he's got to hit. And we know Adoree Jackson is going to start next year. And you're not going to pay all that money for both Butler and King. Well, I mean, look, if you did, they'd both start, and then your second-round pick is your fourth corner. I think when you look at all the other needs, I can't imagine that. I really can't. So if they do that, then I think that, you know, they're going to cut Butler. Now, Butler, you know, and this is over the cap. I had to do an exercise this week for The Athletic, which actually is up today on possible cap casualties, and Malcolm Butler topped my list. I mean, if the Titans cut him before June 1st, you know, his cap hit next year is 14-2. So Malcolm Butler's cap hit next year is third on the team. You know, you got Tannehill at 29.5, yeah. You got Byard at 15, and then you got Butler. I mean, that's ahead of Lawan's 13.7. It's ahead of Derrick Henry's 13.5. So that's a big cap hit. Now, if you cut it before June 1, you know, $4 million of that is dead money. So you have to pay that anyway, but you save $10.2 million. That is a big savings. So that's my way of answering the question. Okay, if that's what they do, if they're going to cut Malcolm Butler and save $10.2 million, then I could see him trying to sign Desmond King. And if that's the case, I would assume they would be looking at Christian Fulton to be one of the starting outside cornerbacks. Is that where he's best suited? I mean, I don't know. I think maybe he's best suited in the slot, which if that's the case, I think there's a better chance that they keep Butler, keep paying him, and they let King go somewhere else.
Joe, at number 25 on the list from Pro Football Focus is Corey Davis. And basically the description that they throw out here is, while Davis may never live up to his number 5 overall draft status, he has become a reliable number 2 receiver. His 4-year body of work puts him slightly above average when measured by PFF receiving grade. And you scroll down here on the list, and Pro Football Focus has Corey Davis signing a 4-year $65 million contract, $32 million of which is totally guaranteed, $20 million fully guaranteed at signing with the Washington football team. What do you think of that price tag for Corey Davis? 4 years, $65 million. That equates to $16.25 per year.
Yeah. I mean, if someone wants to pay him that, then I think you're waving goodbye to Corey Davis. You know, I just – he's a really good player, and he had a heck of a year. And it's, you know, frankly, it was good to see him after all he had been through early in his career with injuries and all that stuff, have that kind of year. And of course, a very tough year personally for him, losing his brother. The Titans, of course, turned down the fifth-year option. Had they picked up the option, he'd be on the team this year making 15-7. I don't know how anybody could possibly second-guess turning down that option. They were never going to pick up that option based on what he had done, you know, in his first 3 years. I guess if that happens, that's how things go in this league. People get massive deals when they get to free agency, you know. I think that's too much for him. But if he gets something like that, I don't think he's going to be here next year.
No, I don't think he will be either. I mean, 16.25 per year, that's a whole lot of money for Corey Davis. Now, you know, maybe he can get that, and maybe that'll be the market for him. And if so, I agree. I don't think he'll be with the Titans next year. But I saw that contract and that number and was like, whoa. Like, if Corey Davis, if that's the type of numbers that we're talking about, he's probably not going to be here. So we'll see what ends up happening with that. I'd be pretty surprised if it ends up being that high with Corey Davis. The player that I really wanted to see where they fit in on this list from Pro Football Focus was always Jadeveon Clowney, because we've talked about him a lot. Obviously comes in, it was the disaster with the Titans. He got hurt and was a non-factor the entire season. At number 31 on this list from Pro Football Focus, it's Jadeveon Clowney. And not only is he at number 31 on this list, Joe, but the prediction that Pro Football Focus has thrown out there is for the Titans to re-sign Jadeveon Clowney to a one-year contract worth $13 million that is fully guaranteed at signing. A fully guaranteed $13 million contract for 1 year. I don't know how the Titans could justify that.
Well, and there's an example of, you know, I take a lot of shots at Pro Football Focus, so I'll take another one. I mean, that's stupid. It's just terrible analysis. There's no way that happens. Now, is there a way that Jadeveon Clowney is back here next year? I would say, you know, there's a possibility if the number was right, and the number is way less than that. But again, with him, I think there's going to be somebody out there who does the same thing. It's going to be the list is going to get smaller and smaller. You know, this offseason is not going to be Sean Payton coming to cook him a home cooked meal to try to recruit him and all this stuff. Like, it's not going to be this frenzy to sign Clowney, but there's going to be a team or two that says, oh man, sure, look at that. Look at that, that hit against Michigan in the bowl game. Like, I mean, come on. You wouldn't really get Clowney on the practice field. It's like, is he a tight end? He was running like a 4.5 out there. I mean, obviously he's an enticing player. Someone will pay him too much, but the Titans are not paying him $13 million guaranteed next year after what just happened. I mean, there's just zero chance.
I mean, he had a tough enough time getting a contract last year. I mean, you factor in this year and the injuries that he's had. Like, if I'm the Titans, I'm not saying you totally close the door on bringing him back, but if it gets over like much over $4 million, I'm not bringing that dude back. Like, I understand he could probably get more than that somewhere else. And
yeah, he will.
If that's the case, then see you, buddy. But I'm not, if I'm the Titans, I'm not going much over that. Do you agree?
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah. I mean, honestly, five, maybe something like that. You know, it's like, so you could do the whole like get the band back together plan and try to get Watt and Clowney and pay him a combined. Like, could you get those two for a combined $13 million? Probably not. So just move on, you know. But yeah, I can't imagine going much past like 5-6. But someone will go past that. I mean, I don't know. Like, if he makes 8 figures next year, some team is stupid. But I could see a team giving him like 8, something like that. You know, $8-9 million.
Right after Jadeveon Clowney on the list, at number 32 comes in Jonnu Smith. And Jonnu Smith, as we know, statistically was probably on pace to have a much better year than he ended up having just from a stat standpoint. And then Taylor Lewan goes down and he's asked to do some different things in the blocking game. Pro Football Focus has Jonnu Smith signing a 4-year, $38 million contract, $20.5 million totally guaranteed, $15 million fully guaranteed at signing, and he has them has Jonnu Smith signing with the Jacksonville Jaguars. So Jonnu Smith, according to Pro Football Focus, maybe not with the Titans. Maybe he ends up in Jacksonville next season.
4-year, what? What was it?
$38 million.
Yeah. That's I mean, that sounds in the neighborhood of what he could get, you know, just shy of like 10, and like you said, that's good, that's a good guarantee, but 20 million plus guaranteed. And you know, here's the thing. So like, if I'm the Titans, I mean, if it looks like the market for Davis is going to be that out of control, you know, then maybe you focus on, okay, Jonnu's got to be a part of things moving forward, you know.
Yeah.
Keep Jonnu. Keep, obviously you have AJ Brown and Derrick Henry in place. You know, you try to keep Firkser, and you know, and look, who knows? We don't know yet with Adam Humphries. You know, we don't know his situation. It's a big change in the offense, although he didn't play much at all in the second half of the year. You know, the thing with Adam Humphries is, by the way, you know, if he is cut, that's still, I mean, it's, you know, his cap hit's 9.75, but it's $5 million of that is dead money. You're only going to save 4.75 on Humphries if you cut him. So, you know, again, I think a lot of it is the ball is in his court there, but that is something to keep in mind. It's not like you're saving the full almost 10 mil if you cut him. You're saving half of it. If he's healthy, all in, coming back fresh, and you're going to lose Davis, you know, it may be worth not, you know, making him a cap casualty, and at least having Brown, Humphries, pay for Jonnu, and then, of course, you know, you got to go free agency / draft to and you have to do that to some extent anyway to improve your depth at receiver.
And then, Joe, the last Titan in the top 100 list for the Pro Football Focus's list here is Jayon Brown at number 54. They've got the Titans signing Jayon Brown for 4 years, $47.5 million, 22.5 totally guaranteed, and 17.5 fully guaranteed at signing. So Pro Football Focus thinks the Titans hang on to Jayon Brown with a 4-year, $47.5 million contract.
I'm trying to be nice here. We've done a nice segment on Pro Football Focus. They're nice people. I'm sure they work hard. That is so stupid. There's zero chance. There's zero chance.
Pro Football Focus. Zero chance that he's there, or zero chance at that price?
Oh, they're not. Well, yeah, both. I mean, I don't think there's. I think it's extremely remote that Jayon Brown is back. If he is back, it's not for that price. Look at everything else going on with this team. There is no way they can pay that for Jayon Brown. He's been a nice player, terrific value on the pick. He's a playmaker, but like you look at everything else that you have going on, and you got David Long here coming. There's just no way. If they could get him at a discount rate and the market's real weak for him, then maybe. But they're not paying that much money for Jayon Brown. Zero chance.
Pro Football Focus, they love him. Some Jadeveon Clowney and Jayon Brown, baby. That Titans defense is going to make a lot of money if they keep listening to Pro Football Focus.
Yeah. They got, you know, they got Jonnu going to, you know, excited about Urban Meyer's strength coach hirings and bolting down to Jacksonville. So, you know. Hey, they do fine work. They do fine work at times.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do at times. That was the top 100 list as it relates to the Tennessee Titans on Pro Football Focus. When we come back, we'll switch gears. Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville will join us. We'll get into the latest with the Tennessee Volunteers with him and ask about Gus Malzahn as well. All that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Scheduled to be joined shortly by Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. We'll get into the latest on the Tennessee Volunteers with him. And Joe, we talked about a little bit earlier, Tim Banks, now the defensive coordinator at Tennessee. He was hired yesterday. Tennessee had to pay a bit of a hefty price to make that happen, but now they've got their guy. What do you think of Tim Banks as a whole? What do you think he brings to the table as the defensive coordinator of Tennessee Vols?
Yeah, I mean, he's had a successful tenure at Penn State as the co-DC. You know, they've been I mean, the numbers have been very good, you know, for them defensively over the over his tenure. He's, you know, he has a good reputation as a recruiter. He was not the play caller at Penn State. He has been in the past. Of course, you know, the Butch Jones connections are just irresistible. You can't not mention that. But you know, in all seriousness, I mean, he's got a good resume. I think he's a viable candidate. We also know, based on you know, the reporting of Chris Lowe and others, there are a lot of, and you know, a lot of people know about some of the candidates they talked to, but it's quite a list, you know, before they got to Tim Banks. And it just looks like this is a situation where maybe he turned them down at first, or it was just back and forth negotiating, but man, they paid a ton of money for him to be the DC. And that's when one, that is where things are going. They're just, the salaries are just going to keep going up and up and up until basically every Power Five coordinator out there is making more than a mil. That's where we're headed. But two, it does look like, it looks like a team that had to settle for a candidate down the list and then had to overpay.
And with that in mind, let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and bring in Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville. Josh, what's going on, man? Appreciate you taking time to join us today.
Yeah, appreciate you guys having me.
So, Josh, with that in mind, you heard kind of Joe throw it out there a little bit. What do you think of the hiring of Tim Banks as defensive coordinator, and how much of a, I guess, back-and-forth negotiation do you think it was, given the price tag that ended up happening for Tim Banks in this process?
Yeah, well, I do agree with everything I heard Joe say there. Tennessee's paying a ton of money. A lot of schools, especially big-time schools, pay a lot of money. You can think about it this way. When Derek Ansley was hired at $1 million a year, the thought was, man, that's a lot of money. And Tim Banks is getting a 40% bump on that when you look at the average salary over 3 years. And I think part of it was Tennessee had to spend to get a coach that it thought was worthwhile to bring to Tennessee because of the state of the program, because I think the search just tells us that, the amount of coaches that turned down big money, Al Washington turning down big money, and others either turning down big money offers or the possibility of getting that money from Tennessee. Let's see with Tim Banks. He's a guy that has a lot of experience coaching. Now he's going to have more responsibility, and he's going to be the guy that's in charge of Tennessee's defense. And I don't know where Banks would rank on the list of coaches that Heupel wanted, because I do think it's a matter of maybe going back to him with more money, and then that makes Tennessee more attractive to him. So let's see. Like with Josh Heupel as the head coach, I think with Tim Banks as the defensive coordinator, there is a wait and see, let's see what he can prove aspect to this.
Okay, so your reaction, Josh, to Gus Malzahn taking the UCF job, to his press conference, and how would you assess the overall reaction of the Tennessee fan base to that news?
I thought it was mixed from what I could tell. I think there are some Tennessee fans that are looking at UCF thinking, wait a minute, they just hired a guy who had success in the SEC, won an SEC title, and was able to beat Alabama multiple times, including just a couple of years ago. And we got a guy that maybe we're not so confident. Others are saying, okay, well, Josh Heupel's on the rise. Gus Malzahn got fired at Auburn. We don't want to bring in a guy who was fired. That's where the pressure cooker question at the press conference comes in. That's kind of funny, because Gus Malzahn's a guy that would absolutely recognize what he would be stepping into in Knoxville, as I'm sure he is in Orlando. But I think it's mixed among Tennessee fans, and it's probably part of where did you fall in when Josh Heupel was hired in the first place. If you like the hire, then you're going to stick with it, even with the Gus Malzahn news. If you weren't happy with it, then you could use this to say, wait a minute, we could have had this guy. If you bring up financials, it probably would have worked even better to bring in Gus, I think, potentially. I was in favor of the idea of Tennessee going after Gus Malzahn. I look at his record at Auburn as a plus if you're Tennessee. Tennessee has not been anywhere near that level. Gus would have understood what Tennessee's program is, and he's gone up against Georgia, Alabama, and then, of course, everybody from the West every single year, but it did not work out that way. Tennessee always seems to find itself in this kind of position, though, where other coaches at other schools all of a sudden get tied back to Tennessee, and there's that comparison for fans. So I can assure you, over the next 2 or 3 years, assuming Gus stays at UCF, that Tennessee fans are going to be watching what Josh Heupel does, and then watching games in Orlando to compare it to what Gus Malzahn's able to do.
So, Josh, with that in mind, like, obviously, none of us really know how it's going to play out with Josh Heupel, and he may come in here and do a really good job. But it seems like Danny White did not even talk to Gus Malzahn in this process. And we don't know, like, the exact specifics of everything involved, obviously. But if that's the case, and Gus Malzahn was not contacted for this job for Tennessee, to me, that's a big mistake. Would you agree? Like, is it a mistake if Danny White did not at least contact Gus Malzahn during this process?
Well, probably so. If, I thought that Gus would have been a good idea for Tennessee. It was a very confusing time with Kevin Steele being the interim head coach, and you have that awkward connection from Auburn. Now, would that have kept Tennessee from being able to hire Gus Malzahn? I don't know that at all. So, I would have contacted Gus Malzahn, and I would have had interest if I were Danny White, and seeing at least if, one, does Gus want to keep coaching, which we obviously know the answer is yes, with him being hired at UCF, and two, would he think that the Tennessee job is good for him? Yesterday he looked fired up to be at UCF. Would he have brought the same kind of passion to being the head coach at Tennessee and been rejuvenated? I know there's the idea of, well, he was just fired at Auburn. Is he really moving in the right direction? Different sports, but didn't Tennessee fans ask the same question about Rick Barnes? And maybe North Carolina fans, I know on the outside people are asking the same question about Mack Brown. Doesn't mean that Gus is going to have that success, but he's also younger than those guys. And I think better than other people are saying. He was in a tough spot at Auburn, which is a good job, and you can obviously win. He did win there. But it wasn't easy with where Alabama has been, what Georgia became with Kirby Smart, LSU winning a national title, and that obviously negatively affected Gus and the fans' eyes. But I continue to come back to what Tennessee has been. And Tennessee needs to find stability, but it's Josh Heupel's job to find that now. And if he does, it's going to take time. And I think most fans recognize that that's the case, that this is not going to be a, hey, 2021, you're off and running and you're competing at the top of the SEC East. Maybe Gus Malzahn doesn't want the Tennessee job. Maybe he looks at UCF and says, hey, I can win right away, and that's why he's coaching again.
Yeah, I mean, look, the this whole thing with him being fired, I mean, that's the profession. How many coaches in this profession aren't fired at some point, you know? I mean, you've got the rare Nick Sabans out there, and I don't think he was available here. But anyway, I agree with you. I mean, I think Gus would have been a terrific option. I think it's going to be closely watched now, and he did. He seemed to have a lot of energy yesterday. And, yeah, I love the pressure cooker question. Can you handle the heat in Orlando, Gus? Can you handle this, baby? You know, you're stepping up to the big time now. So, Josh, I got to ask you. You mentioned Rick Barnes,
by the way. Yeah.
Oh yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So I got to ask you. You mentioned Rick Barnes. I got to ask you about his team. I was very disappointed in that team watching them Saturday. Where do you think this team is? What needs to happen here for them to figure it out and go into March with momentum?
Yeah, because they haven't figured it out, and I thought after the Kansas game, they probably had, even expecting, you know, another loss or two at least, because that's just how college basketball works. But part of it is how Tennessee is losing. That showing against Ole Miss was so disappointing. And then the same with LSU on Saturday. And the conversation, for different reasons, keeps coming back to the offensive end. And, you know, part of it is just not shooting well. They got some shots where if they fall early against LSU, maybe the game goes in a different direction. But I also think consistent playmaking just has not been there from a number of players, really starting with the veterans. And I don't know exactly why the reason is, but with John Fulkerson, who got off to a pretty good start this season, and the second half of the season has not been that way for him, you know, part of it may be on his performance and where his head is, and has he lost some confidence? I think that's a question you could be asking. But I'm also wondering, is Rick Barnes doing enough to help John Fulkerson? After the game against LSU, Rick Barnes was talking about we need more bite, not just bark from the players, but I think they also need more help. You know, John Fulkerson's not Grant Williams. So a couple of years ago, if you didn't like the performance of the players, you could call out Grant or Admiral Schofield and know that they would respond the next game. And I just think you have different personalities here on this team. So I don't know that John's been put in the best position. John Fulkerson's been put in the best position to make plays, and I do wonder, does he feel like he should defer? Because we've known in the past that he looked at other players and said, you know, it's probably their team, not mine. I don't know whose team it should be. They also need better point guard play, and I don't know that that's really going to happen. So that's why I would also come back to you need to figure out ways for guys to make plays, because one area where I was wrong is I thought they had a number of ball handlers and playmakers that could, you know, maybe not lead the way as a traditional point guard, but guys that could, from Viscovi, Springer, Johnson, Josiah Jordan, James, and Bailey, make plays within the offense, and it just hasn't been there consistently enough. And if it's not there in March, then Tennessee's probably going to get bounced early. The potential's still there for this team. And a lot of teams in college basketball have similar issues, but Tennessee was expected to be different, to not have these kinds of issues, but they're still here.
Josh Ward from WNML in Knoxville has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Road. Josh, appreciate you taking time to join us as always, my friend. Great stuff, and have a great week.
You got it. Thanks, guys.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth are with you on this Tuesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. This poll question revolving around Gus Malzahn, now the head coach at UCF. And today's question is this. Tennessee fans, if you could choose one or the other, who would you prefer to have been the next football coach at Tennessee? Would it be Josh Heupel or would it be Gus Malzahn? 158 votes are in. Joe, 53% say Gus Malzahn, 47% say Josh Heupel. So this poll continues to be very close, much closer than I thought it would be.
Well, this is exactly what you said earlier, Robbie. You know, the acceptance, we've gone to the acceptance stage, you know, and should. I mean, look, you should be just hoping for the best with Heupel. But, man, I can't believe that if you took this whole fan base and said, just be honest, you got your choice right now. Which one of these guys are you picking? I can't believe that almost 50% of that fan base would say, I'll take Heupel, baby. I don't buy that at all. But I guess I'm not shocked by the – I figured the poll would be maybe something like 60-40, 65-35. Because there's a lot of people that are just going to – they're just going to say, hey, I'd want the guy I have. And some people are. Some people are just like – they think Gus is awful. I don't get it. I don't think they're looking at his tenure correctly or understanding the challenges of having that job in this era of Nick Saban being the ultimate overlord of college football. But regardless, there's also, I think, the element of just, hey, Josh is our guy, and you're going to roll with Josh.
Gus Malzahn, he's such an interesting guy to me from this standpoint. Look, I've been on record saying, like, I don't think Gus Malzahn is like this perfect coach. I think he's got some issues offensively, and quite frankly, I think it's going to take some reinventions on his part and some rediscoveries to get himself modernized a little bit with college football and the way it's played now. I think a lot of what he was doing, you know, back in 2013 and 2014 was great at the time. I'm not sure how much of it works anymore. So I'm interested, number one, to see how he adapts at UCF. But it is pretty amazing. Like, when you look at how this has taken place here and what's gone on, that Gus Malzahn is at UCF. And the conversation that we had with Josh Ward in the last segment, I think is also an interesting one, because could it be that Gus Malzahn just views the UCF job is a lot better of a job than Tennessee. Like, I think a lot of people hear that and they just immediately roll their eyes and look at the pageantry and the history and the tradition, everything at Tennessee that goes for them, obviously being in the SEC as well. And then you think to yourself, well, who in the world could possibly think that UCF is a better job than that? And I don't think UCF's a better job, but I do think there is a very negative perception right now of Tennessee. It's not just with Jeremy Pruitt and the recruiting violations and everything that have taken place over the last few months. I think there's been a negative perception for Tennessee and with Tennessee for a long time right now with some coaches and with some people around the country. And to me, if I'm a Tennessee fan and the fact that Gus Malzahn has ended up at UCF and it doesn't even look like either one, he was offered the opportunity or even gauged his interest at Tennessee. Number one, that's concerning. But number two, this continues to be a situation where, as Josh said in the last segment, only Tennessee ends up finding themselves in this situation where a guy like Gus Malzahn and the success that he's had in the SEC, basically you don't even get a sniff of him here at Tennessee and he ends up at a place like UCF. That to me is a pretty eye-opening thing if you're a Tennessee fan.
Yeah, and you brought up Danny White earlier in the whole – and I do believe, like, if Heupel doesn't work out, I think Danny White hires the next coach. But if you're Danny White right now, you're rooting hard against your former employer. You don't – because, look – I mean, look, the perception was and the reality was, as small a sample size as it was and as odd a year as this has been, the reality was the program was going in the other way under Heupel. And so if Gus comes in there and all of a sudden they're firing on all cylinders and recruiting like crazy and winning, then, you know, it's not going to look good. Also, I agree with you, Robbie. No, the Tennessee job is better. I mean – you want to compete at the highest level, have the absolute most resources, fans, coverage, facilities, like all those things are better. Now, in terms of access to the thing that we all, I mean, basically everyone cares about most and almost exclusively cares about the playoff. Well, I mean, UCF, if the expansion is coming, and you could say, well, that increases Tennessee's chances too, but you know, if the expansion's coming and you have a group of five spot locked in, then I could see Gus and that program being in the playoff, you know, over several years, at least a couple times. You know, right now it's like, can you beat Cincinnati? Can you get past Cincinnati? In Tennessee, you know, we know the challenges and all the different programs that you're looking up at right now. So from that perspective, I could see why it's more attractive, and certainly – although the hilarious question of whether he can handle the pressure was just amazing yesterday. I mean, it's just it's way less of a fishbowl job than Tennessee would have been.
So I also wonder, like, if you're Gus Malzahn, like how are you viewing this? Are you viewing this as, hey, I'm going to be at UCF for, I don't know if the rest of the of his career is the right one, but I would think that Gus Malzahn probably wants another shot at a high level job, whether it's in the SEC or elsewhere throughout the country. And look, maybe UCF turns into that job. I don't know. But I just wonder how Gus Malzahn is approaching this job, because he had every reason in the world to stay at home and not really do anything and be very selective with his options, given the buyout and the money that he was being paid for Auburn. And quite frankly, when we were having the discussion about him maybe being a potential fit at Tennessee, that was a part of the discussion. Like, if you're Gus Malzahn, do you want to come in and deal with all this crap at Tennessee right now, given how much money you're making being paid not to coach? I just wonder how Malzahn views this opportunity with UCF and how much maybe he's keeping his eyes open around the country for some bigger name jobs that could come open in the next few years.
Yeah. But again, it is, I mean, if it goes this way and they get to 8, which I think has happened, I just don't know when. But you know, you could look at this as like it was kind of a stroke of brilliance on his part.
Yeah.
You know, because now, I mean, look, and you may go into that playoff and you may be the 8th seed and get thumped every year by Alabama and Clemson. But, I mean, that's what the 4 seeds are getting now anyway. So, I mean, it's no different than anybody but the top 2, 3, 4 programs in the country. So if you can say, hey, we're going to the playoff every year, and then you can recruit to that, and you're in Florida now already, and look at the other programs. I mean, yes, Florida is going to be very strong under Mullen, but, you know, Florida State's in flux. We don't know what's going on there. Miami's okay. I mean, it's not nearly as strong in that state as it has been historically either. You know, like this is quite an opportunity. So maybe this is Gus's permanent landing spot. He did seem really energetic. I mean, I was like, Gus, yeah, a little time off, little time on the golf course. You know, he was pumped. He looked like a new man. I'm sure the pressure of Auburn beat him down over those years, you know, and you could kind of see it then too. So the thing I wish we could find out, we never will, but I wish we could find out, is if Tennessee went after him and did the full court press and said, Gus, we love what you did at Auburn. We know how tough that job was. We want you to come in here, and we're going to give you time and everything you need, and we just want you to get us to Atlanta in a few years, and we know you can do it. If that had happened, what would Gus Malzahn have said? I would love to know the answer to that hypothetical.
I would too. And what about this hypothetical? You think Kevin Steele joins that staff at UCF, Joe? Think that goes down that way?
Oh, let's be buddies again, Kevin. Come on. Oh, my goodness. Amazing.
Can you imagine if that happens?
What is Kevin still going to do? Is he still like, is he like organizing the shelves right now at like $8,000 an hour? Like, what's going on?
Kevin Steele's being inducted into the Ski Mask Hall of Fame. That's what he's doing.
Yes, he is.
There you go.
Yes, he is. First I'm ballot. Glad to know
you're still awake, Worth.
I'm here. I'm here.
First ballot on Ski Mask.
Is it Wednesday?
Almost. We're getting there, man. We're getting there.
Close, buddy. Just hang in there. When we talk a lot about the draft coming up and put some potential fits for the Tennessee Titans, let's revisit the draft from a year ago and specifically the first round pick. How much longer should the Titans put up with Isaiah Wilson? How much leash do they have with him moving forward before they simply have to move on? We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.